You're listening to Raising Anchor, a Rhode Island FC podcast. We're glad you're here. Hello, and welcome to Raising Anchor, your podcast and source for all things Rhode Island FC. I'm your host, Matt Intrican, coming to you on Thursday, April 24th. Soccer in New England was officially amber and blue this week as Rhode Island FC wins their first game in club history. We'll unpack how they got the job done and share how they can get it done Friday as the 2023 USL champions come to Burn Stadium. To help me sort through all of that and more is co-host Jason Carey. Jason, how is it going, my friend?
Not too bad, buddy. I was told that April 25th was supposed to be the perfect day. Not too hot, not too cold, you know, for just a light jacket. But I don't know, we had some freeze coming in, so I don't know. I feel like Mitch Congeniality lied to me.
I have never been more proud in my life than for you to land the ultimate Rhode Island joke. You've made it. You're, as far as I'm concerned, you're official, buddy. Congratulations. Well done. Like golf clap across the board. If so many other things hadn't happened right now, I think we could just call this show a quit, right? I mean, we announced that they won. Congratulations to Rhode Island FC. Congratulations on that joke. But that's just not how life happens. We've got a ton to cover, and we've got to try to keep this tight because while we're recording tonight, we know that for our fans listening, they got to get this thing consumed before game time at 7:30 tomorrow. So are you ready to keep this tight and keep it right?
Let's do our best.
All right, so let's get the quick stuff out of the way. First and foremost, Dom Dwyer to the Oakland Roots. That is now, at least as far as I'm keeping attention in the league, that's two former U.S. men's national team players in this league competing at least as professional of a level as they can. You know, I got to ask, is this a good move for the USL? Is this a good move for Oakland Roots?
Oakland has some scoring trouble from what I've heard.
Dom Dwyer does not have scoring troubles, but that's a different kind of scoring, and we're not going to talk about that here on this podcast.
Yeah, so potentially. He hasn't played all of last year, right? Wasn't he pseudo-retired, I think? So.
Yeah, like he's been, after his time with Sporting Kansas City, he's basically bounced from MLS team to MLS team. He was either with Orlando last or Atlanta and just really never did anything after his heyday of his U.S. men's national team career and winning a trophy with Sporting. So, listen, I'm glad he's still playing. It's not a slight at all. And I think this is like a light version of Didier Drogba, a very light version, I should say, of a former, you know, more famous professional athlete coming in. I like to see these things. I guess I'm just kind of asking, as this league finds its identity, we don't want to become Retirement League 2.0, right?
No, yeah, that's not what the USL is here for, but along the way, if some, you know, stars kind of from here and there kind of hang out in the league, I don't see much of a problem.
I'll take it. So with the good must come the bad. This is breaking news. We don't have enough time on tonight's show to unpack it. We will definitely dive into this deeper as more gets pronounced. But Indy 11 suddenly has gone from being what I've always considered kind of one of the core four when it comes to stability, popularity, and overall kind of performance within USL. They've gone from being one of the core tenets to suddenly they're at risk, similar to San Diego Loyal, of being dethroned and kicked out of their own city with a war that MLS has brought to Indianapolis's doorstep.
Yeah, I wonder if someone has notified the Department of Homeland Security, because there is a war going on here in America. The MLS terrorists have declared war on USL.
The soccer wars are real.
This smells of subterfuge. So really quickly, because we're not going to go through the whole thing. Earlier today, the development group for Indy 11 Stadium went public that the city is walking away from the deal. It was a similar to Tidewater. It's supposed to have mixed-use entertainment, housing, like a whole, you know, plethora of stuff going on, not just a stadium. Then at 5:30, the mayor holds a press conference and announces that he flew on Monday to New York to talk to Don Garber about about the possibility of the city pursuing an MLS bid. So
is this a nothing statement? I mean, it's a real statement that they've pulled funding, which legally I don't even know. We're going to have to unpack that at a later date. But like, this is scandal at the highest order. I tweeted about it as soon as you told me. And all I know out of this are three things at the moment. One is this is a terrible day for soccer in America, and the U.S. Soccer Federation needs to figure this out. Like, this is going to continue to happen. It is going to harm the game more than bring it to the next level. Second, the USL, they're going to need to figure out ProRel at this point yesterday. Like, if these things continue to happen to put risks in the market, there has to be that differentiation, and it has to come as fast as possible. We can no longer continue to talk as if it's a good idea. As far as I'm concerned, every team is at risk from the likes of Don Garber, who I said this on a podcast with Revolution Recap. Don Garber just hates America. Like, at this point, that's all there is to it. He clearly doesn't want to see the growth of the sport.
Yeah, I think all you know, sizable USL markets teams should be worried. That being said, there's no official announcement from MLS. There is no ownership. There's nothing here is official. But this feels like MLS, you know, trying to put some sort of doubt and kind of destabilize USL, because I think they're kind of afraid of their growth.
So let's talk about what is official. And officially this week, Coach Conno Smith named USL Coach of the Week. Stephen Turnbull also named to Team of the Week. Congratulations to both of them, especially Coach Conno. It's seventh game into his career. You know, he gets that honor. I got the chance to interview him, Noah Fusan, and Stephen Turnbull earlier today. Those interviews are live on our YouTube channel. They were so long, I couldn't really clip them or bring them into Twitter or into Instagram. So if you want to go see those in-depth interviews, they are on our social media channels there. They're really good insight into all three of those individuals on kind of how they performed at the Vegas game and what they were kind of thinking about leading into for this game against Phoenix Rising. You know, Conno was very humble and said, hey, like, it's my award, but it takes an army, right? It takes a village. So he was really humble about that. I don't know how Noah Fusan doesn't get on Team of the Week or at least make the bench. I know there was a brace scored in one of the teams. I think Louisville had a brace. And I know there were two like half-line goal scores that happened in last week's performances, like right before the half and right after the half. But to not make it like with an assist and a goal, like, I think Fusan kind of got robbed on that one. Or Fusan. Do we say Fusan? Or Fusan. There's been some controversy there, according to broadcasters. But Fusan was robbed.
He'll make it there, definitely. At the same time, though, I mean, you know, if we're being honest, do we want to bring that much attention to him so that someone comes and takes us from him? Hopefully not. He can be our you know, little secret weapon there.
Did you just call Noah Fusan little? Those are fighting words. You better hope he doesn't run into you on tomorrow's game. And then in other quick news, I got the chance to be on a radio station yesterday. I was on 990 AM BOB. It was a lot of fun getting to talk soccer with Matt. It was a really good time. I had a blast. I don't have a recording of it because it's radio and that's how it works. But I can't wait to do it again. If anyone got a chance to listen, I hope you enjoyed it. We're going to be talking about some of the same stuff tonight because I'm a one-trick pony like that. But I hope you got to enjoy it nevertheless. And then also just in like real quick, you know, shameless plug, we're almost to the end of the month. Please don't forget to vote for us in Rhode Island Monthly's Best of Rhode Island series and voting for our podcast poll. I will also give a quick shout out to FQB. Someone said we should nominate him as Rhode Island personality or influencer. I thought that was hilarious. I absolutely think he should get a call out for it because, and I say this where we're not looking to win the podcast poll for ourselves. That is a fun thing to be able to say we did. This helps us elevate the club. So if you're on the fence or you're like, well, you guys aren't my favorite, don't do it because you love us. Do it because we're just simply trying to get recognition to the club. Because that's what they would have to explain what we do and what we cover. So if you feel so inclined, visit rimonthly.com/vote to nominate us today, or you can visit our socials. We have the link in the bio. But that's the news. We're going to keep this tight, keep it right tonight. So let's get into this recap. Rhode Island FC, first win in club history. They did it. They put together a complete 90, a little shaky in the final 20 to 30 minutes, depending on who you ask. But nevertheless, they get the job done in the City of Sin with the 3-5-2. It finally has worked. It has paid off its dividends. Let's get into this game. So you've got in the goal, you've got Lee. No big change there. There was some suspicion if Koke would return, but Lee gets to make his start. And then in that back three, you've got the same three players in Nodarse, Yao, Alves. The difference, though, in this game, and we'll unpack that, is Yao was moved to the central spot within the back three line. And then you've got your back five of Turnbull, Holstead making his triumphant return to the midfield along the likes of Joe Brito and Mark Ibarra, and then Jojea Quizera on that left wing. And then you've got your captain Chico and Noah Fusan holding up the striker core to the front. Jason, I mean, there are a million stats we can pick at here, but like, what do you want? Where do you want to start this?
First one of the season, baby. Six games in. Not too bad. You know, I touched on it last time. Some teams have had worse records. But if we get into the game here, you know, this one was a little interesting. Las Vegas did dominate possession here, 60%. A lot of that did come from the second half. They outpassed us as well and outshot us. In a lot of the previous games, not all of them, RAFC was putting up the numbers. The results just weren't coming their way. But at the end of the day, you know, we scored more goals than they did. So that's the only stat that really matters at the end of the day, right?
You know, it's so funny that you mentioned that, because when I started looking at, like, what did I want to pick apart in this game, I noticed the possession piece too. We've asked ourselves several times, like, what is this team going to become? And what was really interesting in the heat map was the ball was basically in the defensive third for a majority of the first 60 minutes of play for both teams. So when I did the heat map, it was just a clear and obvious spike in like that bottom right back area. And then when I switched it to Vegas's, their own possession, it was all in their defensive third. So you're right, like the stats can tell a story depending on how you want to kind of explain it. But for a majority of time, the ball in those first 60 minutes was in Las Vegas's, you know, danger close areas, if you will. So it, to me, this shows an example of the high press working as intended, to where, you know, there were instances, many chances where Las Vegas had a breakout and tried to do something with it. But for a majority of the time, either Rhode Island FC was collecting the ball and keeping it in that final third, or Vegas couldn't figure out a way to get the ball out into the channels. And I think we saw that work specifically in two major adjustments that, you know, when we asked Coach, he said they weren't necessarily adjustments. It was just the players working as intended. But we saw two big things here. One, we saw that midfield continue to move up, but they were more closely anchored to the front striker groups. And you saw a reluctance, if you will, and I don't even know if that's a fair word, but you saw our back three really stay anchored defensively and not creep into the opposition half unless absolutely necessary. They really relied on Jackson Lee's ability to get balls out and into the final third more than any kind of possession-based play or building out the back like Vegas tried to do. And you saw that create chances, because while Lee's distribution may not have been spectacular, it was adequate. His ability to try to find opportunities for players that were more advanced up the field, whether it was the midfield or their forwards, it allowed us to kind of say, hey, we're okay if Vegas gets the ball back. We're gonna do our part. We're gonna let them collect, and they're gonna have to earn an attempt against us. And if we win it back in their final third, we're gonna cause chaos for them. And yeah, if you somehow get it to us, we're gonna just long ball it back, and we're gonna try this all over again.
And one of the key differences there too is when we bypass the midfield and go straight into their like final third, we're not losing the ball in our own half and generating scoring opportunities for the opposition, which has hurt us a lot in the past. So like you said, even if not every single pass was won by one of our forwards and midfielders, at least Las Vegas is collecting the ball at best midline.
I will say, though, when you look at the stats in those columns, it does make us look pretty poor, because when you're relying on long balls or those connector passes and they don't get completed, passing accuracy is just something you wave goodbye to, because it's not something you're going to convert a majority. I mean, there's a reason that doesn't happen a lot in soccer. So I loved seeing it. I think at first, before we had any goals on the night, it was a bit confusing, because they didn't adopt this once a goal was scored. They continued to throw this kind of forward, this strategy, this style. But once those goals came, wow, incredible unlocks here. So let's talk about this. You know, a lot of people have said all week that it was a tale of two halves. I agreed to it a certain extent, but I really want to kind of talk about how these goals happen for Rhode Island FC, because I think, again, one of the big changes here, and it was big, but it was subtle at the same time, our wingbacks finally got into this game. We've been talking, I think, since the beginning, that there's a noticeable lack of either crosses, accurate crosses, the ability for the wingbacks to collect the ball, beat their first defender, and advance the ball. It's been noticeable, and they either at times have struggled with that, or they've been quiet and the ball has moved more directly and centrally through the middle of the field. That wasn't the case tonight. You know, both Jojay Aquazera and Stephen Turnbull, they doubled their touches and passes on their, not just average for the season, but to the next highest match that they have had so far in the season. And you saw it. You saw it every single time they collected the ball and moved something up the flanks, or they redistributed it and became a threat on those wings.
What we saw from them was a lot better. Their average positions were still fairly high because we anchored those center backs a little further back. You know, there were times when they were helping out in defense, but we saw them much further up, and they were getting to the byline and sending in crosses, a significant amount of crosses, what I think it was like 20 on the night.
Yeah, it was higher than any other one that we had
attempted. The last game was like 3. And not only that, what I really love to see was those cutbacks. You know, you get to the byline, and sometimes crossing doesn't always work. You try and pass it back to the top of the box for a runner. Like you said, we've did a lot better in terms of our wing play, and I think that really helped out on the night.
And it did. Not only the cutbacks, but it would, even a cross would destabilize Vegas's ability to contain the amount of pressure. And we didn't just throw numbers forward haphazardly, right? Like, let's talk about Turnbull's goal. That only happens because, one, Turnbull is committing at the right time. We have seen so many times in this team so far where the likes of Chico gets a breakaway or Fusan's on a breakaway, and there is no one on the other side of that run to take a ball and collect it and put it into the back of the net. That was the case this one, because we saw the numbers come forward. There were several attempts after the cutback. The ball gets distributed out, and there is Turnbull screaming, and similar to the goal he scored against the Independents, and just one times it. He doesn't set. He doesn't get it to his feet and get comfortable. It's just a rocket. It's a volley rocket straight into the back of the net, and he puts up his goal for his first goal for the season, at least in regular play. Like, those don't happen unless a team is comfortable with where their wingbacks are playing, both defensively and offensively. And in those moments, like a run like that from your wingback, who for all intent should be back at that point because the ball could be, you know, getting a counter in any second, the tactical aptitude, like, it was just incredible to watch.
I think a lot of that had come from them really understanding where they are now. We're 6 games in. We've said that this team is just about there. So I think the chemistry is really showing here, and things have like finally clicking.
I agree. And same with that additional clicking, you know, the next goal, Fusan, who is already coming off of a offsides goal that was very close. I mean, it was maybe 12 inches from being onside. You know, he collects a ball after Chico tries to do something with it in the box. It falls to his feet. Chico, even in his interview, said, hey, it's striker's luck sometimes, right place, right time. But with a cool calculation, he puts in his first goal on the season into the net as well. You know, he gets the assist on the Turnbull goal. He gets the goal. incredible performance. And we're only, what, 35 minutes into the game at this point? So you're just thinking like, wow, like we are running on all cylinders, despite that this was the third game in a three-leg week with the loss coming off of the Independence in Charlotte. Like, this is a team that rallied. They took to the pressure. They understood the assignment, and they rose to the occasion, at least up until, you know, the halftime.
The first half, there really isn't much we could complain about. You know, at the end of the day, we got the win. So, but if we jump into the second half here, Las Vegas made some subs. They took out Coleman Gannon and Fabian Garcia and brought in Charlie Adams and Joseph Hafferty. I think these changes were really kind of what helped got Las Vegas into the game. If you look statistic-wise, the two players that came out didn't have a lot going for them. Charlie Adams won six duels in the second half, and Joseph won possession five times. So they really kind of helped Las Vegas get and retain the ball. As we were going into the first 10 minutes of the second half, we saw a lot of continuous pressure from Vegas and ultimately gave up a goal. I don't think it was anyone's fault in terms of, you know, someone missed their marker or something. There was maybe an opportunity to clear the ball, but overall the team was doing a lot better. There were a few opportunities where, you know, we would just see our team just boot the ball forward just to kind of relieve that defensive pressure. But, you know, they have like three corners in a row before we gave up the goal.
And listen, that goal, like you said, it was continuous pressure. It was multiple deflections. It wasn't like a poor set piece defending. It wasn't bad man marking. Sometimes goals will come, whether it's just due to the tenacity and the skill of the player attempting the shot or just luck. And I've seen a lot of goals this season where I'm just like, hey, like, and we've talked about it, right? We've talked about the defensive structure or shape or just kind of mindset at the time. That's not this. This is just, we couldn't alleviate the pressure. Maybe we were a little bit slow to adjust to those substitutions. And so one of them kind of just leaked in. I didn't hit the panic button, in at least at that sense. Like, that wasn't something that surprised me. I'm not upset about that.
And throughout the second half, we saw Vegas have a lot more possession. We wouldn't say that RFC stopped attacking. There were definitely some opportunities where they took the ball up the field and tried to score.
I think there is a couple things, though, that we do need to call out about that. And you're right. I wouldn't say that we ever took our foot off the pedal, but there were some substitutions that were made that made me lead to believe that we were kind of holding on at that point and that we were shifting gears. One is our wingback substitutions, Nathan Messer and Colin Smith, are incredible. Like,
they have both been great every time they've seen minutes on the field, from what I could see.
I honestly think that those were some of the best additional players, because they are borderline starters. Like, if we have a game where we need to rest the likes of Quisera or Turnbull, or they're just not having a good week, like, the alternates in these particular subs, they are exceptional. And they also bring a completely different set of skills. I would say that Smith is more direct and comfortable taking one-on-one than the likes of Turnbull. And I would say Messer is a little bit more physical and, again, direct, whereas Quisera is a little bit more speed and finesse. So, like, the fact that we have different play structures but completely perfectly capable subs was fantastic. So we saw those come. And again, probably because they're gassed after both of our starters playing two full games that week. But the Chumesi sub was the one that kind of made me go, okay, we had a couple of other options off the bench. We had the likes of Sadie, you know, we had Doyle, who did make an appearance. We had Vang, but we went defensive. At least as I've come to understand Chumesi's role on this team, it's a classic CDM. To me, that was like, okay, we need to shift into just holding on to this win. And that kind of changed some of the dynamic. If it wasn't for the likes of Chico running himself all over the pitch, you know, it's a shameless stat that doesn't give him anything, because as a striker, you're basically your goals and your assists. But he was playing almost like a false nine, a cam at times, just trying to help alleviate pockets of pressure where he was playing considerably deeper. His heat map was more central this game, because he was trying to help move the ball. I think that's actually also what allowed Fusan to kind of unlock and move further up the pitch than Chico on this game. But like, Chico got a thankless performance in the fact that he was basically acting as that foil to, especially once Chumesi came in, he had to work even harder because Chumesi played so deep. But overall, to your point, I think where you're going with this, you know, it was still great gamesmanship. It was still great management from Coach Cano. He really set the tone. And I think you were saying something about when we got to the extra time and it was squeaky bum time, because I don't know how extra time is working now in this league. It's a little insane. The minutes just, it seems like so many minutes. I remember 2 years ago, it was like 3 minutes. You'd get 1 minute in the first half, no matter what. That was all you'd usually get. And they may add it in that second half. I think they played, 14 additional minutes of extra time in this game?
I don't know. It
was like six and eight.
It felt like it kept going.
And then they played like two more on top of the eight.
I've noticed as I've watched a lot of highlights from USL games, you see the like plus seven, and then you look at the timer, it's like 99 minutes. So I don't know if this is something that the USL is doing to try and curb time wasting by saying, hey, you know, we're not going to let you get away with trying to just kick the ball out constantly. We want to give the attacking team a fair chance to try and, you know, get a goal there. But it's happened quite a few times. And I learned something interesting. Did you know that the squeaky bum time, that term was actually invented by the Sir Alex Ferguson?
Of course it was.
Yeah, of course. Real quick, though, before we start to move on, for Chumesi, I still feel like the jury is out on him. I think he's still a bit raw. I still would like to see a bit more of him. I don't know. You know, you say he's a six, but I'm not sure.
Oh, I mean, the way the coach has taken every one of these players and kind of reshuffled the deck this year, Joe Brito as a cam, I would have thought he was an eight. Holstead has played just about every role in this team except for a striker. Like, yeah, I'm not in or out on anyone just yet. I'm just simply saying that from what we've been told and what we've seen, it was the thought that he was a six, but he's got like the third least amount of minutes from the healthiest of our players this season. So
yeah, and I know that some people are being a little rough on him, and at the end of the day, we won the game.
I mean, people were rough on Jackson Lee after his two USL Team of the Week performances because he almost, you know, cost us the game with that neutralizer where he lasered it right to the waiting Las Vegas player and then made the dive. But Alba, let's get honest, there was a player in Las Vegas who was on our side of the night. Like, he was so frustrated.
Their striker number nine who got a yellow card like 10 minutes into the game.
He wasted so many chances. We were inside his head within the first 10 minutes of that game. I will say there is a fun fact. I don't know if you caught this, but this is my favorite one on the night. Did you see the number of fouls in the game?
Yeah, I saw that we were not the leading aggressor this time.
Yeah, right. First time that we didn't. Do you think Coach listens to the podcast and said, go down for the love of God if you get hit? Because, I mean, we did see our players, they still maintain their physicality. But I think we did see a few times where they rightfully started kind of taking the hits and going to ground.
I mean, I don't think he listens to us for his tactics. I imagine he probably checks out what nonsense we're spewing from time to time. But we did see some good game management from the team here. This also being the first time that we need to see out a victory at the end. So, you know, we were taking short corners. We were trying to do the thing where you just protect the ball in the corner and kick it off of them to just waste more time. Which, hey, I mean, if you're in the lead and you need to protect yourself, like, there's nothing, it's not against the rules to do that. So, no, you know, it's always frustrating as a fan of the other team to see it. But at the same time, it's like, hey, you had 90 minutes to win the game. At this point, you maybe get one or two more opportunities and that's it.
No, I was super proud of the performance that our guys put on for the night. I actually, even so much so, I want to go back and just give Yao a shout out. I know I was pretty critical of him the last game. Not only did he have one of the most important saves of the game, but I think he just put on a very solid performance. So much so that to the question we got asked last week about where does he shine, I still can't find that comment about where I read that he benefits more from pairings than he does as a lone like island defender. I think this showed in this case again, where even though we were playing back a little bit deeper, his ability to rely on his fellow center backs allowed him to have a fantastic performance. I think in the future, and I hope if Coach doesn't listen to us for the tactics, I hope that he can at least recognize what we saw on it. And it's that I think Yao does significantly better when he's in the middle of that back three. I think Frank Nodarse can play anywhere in that, because he actually has played anywhere in that back three. So he's a little bit more versatile, and Alves is continuing to show how comfortable he can be in that left back role. So I think we found our back three. I think it's been a little bit of an experimentation, but this seems, as long as they can maintain what the kind of defensive showmanship that they put on for this night, I think this shows us that they can handle anything that gets thrown at them.
So with the whole team healthy, then what would you do with Stoneman?
I mean, I'm not going to say that Stoneman's had bad games per se, but like at the same time, he hasn't shown that he's a lock-on starter. I mean, this team battled through a lot of adversity this week, and you know, I think Stoneman's now been out 3 games in a row, and he will probably be out a few more. We'll talk about that in a second. As far as I'm concerned, it's this back three's, you know, spots to lose, or at least formationally, until we see some other formation deploy. I think that this makes the most sense. I mean, this team went from a tie to a just probably gut-wrenching loss into a hot 90-degree game in the desert. I think this team, like you've been saying this entire time, this team needs to gel. They need to find this adversity, this complexity, and come together. We're on the north side of this 10-game march. We're picking up wins now. We're bringing the points. We're grabbing points where it matters. We probably would like more points, of course, but we're taking points nevertheless. And I wouldn't mess with what's not broken.
In some way, do you think the congested schedule that we just had kind of helped with that? Like, you send the team out, they go through all the hardship, you know, go through their soccer war and come out a better team?
You know, I don't know for sure. I will say that Coach had a really powerful quote in the interview that's on the YouTube channel. And he said that good teams don't lose 2 games in a row. And I thought that was, you know, he counts, in his mind, he counts the Open Cup as a loss, whether it was regular season or something else. And so I think for this team to kind of work and push through that, it shows their dedication to each other. It shows their dedication to Coach Cano. And it shows that they're ready to really kind of put in a performance when it's needed and when it's demanded of them. So I just nothing but, you know, the highest of accolades going on to that. So let's get into these table standings, huh?
The weather's getting better and we have arisen from our basement. Now we are in the playoff section of the table. Can we stand the heat?
We're talking about playoffs already, and you made a desert heat joke. Man, first the perfect Rhode Island joke, and now you're on fire tonight, sir. You're on fire.
Very proud
like
of that line.
Like a phoenix rising from the fire. All right, let's get into this. So, hey, RIFC now has 7 points on a 1-1-4 record after 6 games. This is big, and it's not just because of the win. I want to talk about something that John Morrissey from USL Tactics threw out there. Yesterday, he put out an XG graph, and the first thing that drew to my attention was I couldn't find Rhode Island FC in the graph. And he had said, like, the further northeast these things went, he was just talking topographically to the graph itself, the better the performance. So I thought he just meant northeast. We are the most northeast team in USL Championship right now. Nevertheless, jokes aside, we were completely parallel to Pittsburgh Riverhounds. Like, our stat performance in XG is basically identical. Our record is almost basically identical as well. And as a result, we were sitting underneath Pittsburgh, so you couldn't even see us in the graph. John went on to complain about Tableau, which is a data measurement software. That's just excuses. He's clearly a Hartford sympathizer. But having
How
said
dare
that,
you, John, I thought we were friends.
Never coming back on this podcast. But having said that, what I noticed about the XG graph is two things. Almost every club that we have played up until that point has basically had a positive goal differential, or at least they did when we played them, or they were performing at a rate that far exceeded their XG. So they were extremely lucky, or they've been extremely good. We haven't played a basement dweller until we played Vegas, but even then on their XG, while they are overperforming, but on the negative side of goal differential, that's because we put them there. So if you rewind the tape a week back, they would have been on the other side of that spectrum and in the right side of things. So I know XG, some people swear by it. You like to go off of that a lot in your own kind of stat research.
It's helpful. It doesn't tell you everything.
Right. But it's kind of becoming a very big, it has become a very big focal point for technical staffs over the last 5 to 10 years. It is a thing that people work through. We have not played a bad team yet. If we go strictly by XG or goal differential, every team we have played have been on the other side of that stat line. So wherever they stand on the table, you know, that's a different story. But we haven't had an opportunity yet to play against any quote unquote poor teams this season. That's very interesting to me, because to then get, if you said we only got 7 points and we were playing the worst teams, maybe I would feel a little differently. But the fact that we've gone up against some of the best, including the Battery and the Rowdies already, and we're sitting with 7 points in eighth place, I'm very happy with this team. Like, and it's not the win. Like, the win definitely is the cherry on top. But we've been saying, like, wait 10 games. If you now take a look back, we're doing everything right, especially as an expansion franchise.
I think it'll be interesting to see as the schedule goes on now, and maybe we see some of those teams. You know, how does this team shape up? Are they who we thought they are? And we gonna, you know, like, do you... We had kind of made early season predictions. Are you still thinking that this is like a top four team, or maybe 4 to 8th? Like, this is definitely, I think, a playoff team.
I mean, if Indy 11 gets removed because they have to disband before the end of the season, then yes.
I don't think that.
Well, that's not how it works. They have to wait till the end of the season. That's
more of a, like, later on.
All problem. Dark jokes aside, if something comes out this year that they... like, this is going to be a loyal effect, we have to go to the away game. We just have to make that sacrifice.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good call.
But I'm going to stay positive, and I'm going to say Don Garber is not going to get what he wants here, and the USS Soccer Federation will do what it takes. But I do believe we are a contender for a home game berth. This again, everything is moving in the right direction. Coach believes that. I believe in Coach, who believes in himself. Like, this is where we need to be. So I'm very confident right now. But let's talk again, you know, after game 10 and see where we're at. I coach sure. Always likes to, like, stay humble. So you ask him about wins. He's like, yeah, we're going to get lots of wins. We're going to get a couple losses too. It's like, don't be realistic in front of your fans, coach. Be a force of positivity. So RFC currently sits in that 8th place in the Eastern Conference after moving up from their win a few spots. They'll be taking on the 2023 USL champions, Phoenix Rising, who currently sits 7th in the West on a 2-4-1 record. It's very interesting where, you know, we've had to scrape a lot of our points by these draws, whereas Phoenix just basically has gotten 2 wins on the season and mostly losses for the team. This is a team that is not, or has not yet found its footing despite its wins last season. So let's get into this injury report. We reported it earlier today. JJ Williams is still out. Coach said he's 1 to 2 weeks away from entering into, like, physical training in terms of, like, contact or, like, actual, like, field exercises. I still think he's probably 2 to 3 weeks out before inserting into a game, or maybe getting light minutes, like closing garbage minutes. I would not expect him before June. Maybe, like, right around a certain derby that will be coming. Amos Shapira-Thompson will remain out indefinitely. Grant Stoneman was not in kit, but he was walking around. Coach said he's out with some knee troubles. And then Connor McGlynn has some sort of toe injury. We saw him in a boot today. I freaked out because I thought, like, oh gosh, that's a broken foot or something. He's in a boot for a toe. I don't know how that works. I'm not a doctor, but... he'll be out for a couple of weeks. So Don't be playing him in any of your fantasy or card collector app strategies. Yeah,
don't make that mistake.
Like yeah, for the people that like lock in their squads like at the beginning of the week, you really need to wait to listen to us to get your club collector app strategy for the week. Having said that, listen, I have never felt more confident about a RIFC formation ever in my life. I think we're going to get this one right for the first time ever. But coach may throw a complete variable in there. We'll see. But it's most likely a 3-5-2. You know it. We love it. And I think it's going to be the only thing that changes here is Vegas returns to the goal. I don't think that, you know, and if you, again, if you go listen to the interview, I won't spoil it. Coach danced around it. You know, he said Lee's been an amazing, incredible performer. But at the same time, Koke is the captain. He's the first signing. Yeah. Like, he built this squad around the intent of Vegas as a weapon. So if I was a betting man, I would imagine that we see Koke return. He was in the goal for the entire practice today. Lee was also there in goal too, but for the bigger moments, like set piece practicing and whatnot, it was Vegas. So I'm assuming it'll be Vegas. Like, does that resonate with you, or am I missing something here?
No, yeah, I think you stick with the hot hand. And then see how that goes. You know, we can always make changes, but I think that they showed out in Vegas that they deserve another opportunity to prove to us and to everyone else that, you know, this team can string some W's together.
Do you think it's fair that Lee takes the backseat to Koke now?
Yeah, he knew that. He's gotten more play time than he would have got if he went to LAFC. You know, he would have been like third, fourth, like. How often do third string goalkeepers ever see the field?
Never.
Like, they're just there to party and hang out with the team and practice.
You mean they're there to go to watch parties to watch the Nate? I'm just kidding. I can't wait to see you out in the net.
I mean, you know, maybe Nate will get his day and that would be awesome. But there is a reality to it that it just doesn't happen very often.
But to be fair, too, third keepers serve a purpose too in practice in. Jelly, like sometimes those are locker guys. Like, it doesn't always have to be you're just waiting and waiting for your spot. Silvera is most definitely contributing to this team, even though he's not getting his shot on the bench or in the goal. Like, let's not.
And you know, he is probably growing as a player by playing with this level of talent. And so if, you know, one day that takes him away from us, like if hopefully, you know, he left as a better player.
So I honestly don't see Jackson Lee with this club at the end of the season.
I don't think we'll see him.
I think the club makes money and sells him, or they negotiate a deal with LAFC when they realize, like, hey, we can get this guy at league minimum. You know, I just don't see Jackson Lee staying. After these performances, I don't see him staying with Rhode Island FC other than unless Vegas was to leave.
Yeah, and that's not to say he won't get any other starts throughout the season. It is a long season. At some point, you know, there are times where you will rest your goalkeeper if there are multiple games within a week, especially if you feel comfortable and confident like Coach Kano does in both of his keepers. But, you know, it is Koke Vegas's starting place to lose. And I just don't think we're going to see him lose that.
So let's talk about Phoenix Rising. Primarily, they have been in love with the 4-2-3-1. If we go off of the most recent kind of way they've shaped out, you're going to see, I love his name, Rocco Rios Novo. He was the MVP of the playoffs last year. He basically is the reason that Phoenix Rising won the championship last year. He's an incredible goalkeeper. They were very lucky to retain him, especially as a lot of other players departed, including their head coach. In that back four, you're going to see Lawrence Wyke, Pape Morboy, John Stenberg, and Gabriel Torres. In that, you know, pairing of sixes in the two, you're going to see Jose Hernandez and Renzo Zambrano. And then in that midfield forward three, you're going to see the likes of Gabriel Torres, Fede Varela, and Darius Formella from last year's performance. He was definitely one of the catalysts of their performance and success on the field last year. And then newcomer Remy Cabral at your lone striker role. Listen, this is, like I've said, not the 2023 USL champions. This team was gutted at the end of last season. It's like, you know, they feasted as the kings of the land, and then everyone feasted on them and just took the best parts, especially after their coach left. It just kind of seemed like no one was there to kind of keep this squad together. You know, we've already seen the success of some like Ortega at the Rowdies and other places. So like this just is a team that is their former selves, similar or very different from the Riverhounds, who were the Supporters Shield winners of last year, which is mostly an intact team. And the results are showing here with these multiple losses, only a few wins on the season. They just don't seem like they have figured out how to answer for the loss of Ortega and Danny Trejo. Where are you thinking this team lines up for you on their performance so far this season, Jason?
Yeah, so like you mentioned, Ortega and Trejo, that's a loss of 32 goals between the two.
32?
Yeah.
Woo.
Not easy to replace. I think that Phoenix overall still has a pretty good offense. I think that their problem, though, seems to be in defense. There are times when it's schoolyard. They're just standing still sometimes, just ball watching.
I saw Monterey Bay take advantage of them like they were traffic cones in their game. A game that was so early in the season, everyone thought Monterey Bay didn't have what it takes, and they put on a clinic.
The Riverhounds just got their first win on the season against them, and those goals that they gave up just seemed comical. Phoenix actually created a lot of chances. They just did not convert.
So I want to actually talk about that stat. So in what I was looking at and kind of where to talk about Phoenix, they have a really good stat. And then of course it's immediately offset by another really bad stat. And it's very similar to what we've seen with the Las Vegas Lights. They have one of the highest chance creation stats as a team in the league right now. But guess what they have that mirrors that? They have the highest failure to convert chance of big chances in the league. So like they have either, you can call that bad. Maybe that's just like bad luck stat, I guess, is a simpler way to say it. But they're not getting the ball into goal when it counts. They are just denying themselves their own chances, getting in their way, and then they're topping that off with some really bad performance shape. This is a team that just seems lost right now. They just don't seem to know what they're doing. I don't know if that's a side effect of a new coach, as well as all of the new, you know, players that had to rotate for those key elements lost. But this seems like a team that's lost in the dark right now.
Yeah. I think Rios Novo is bailing them out a lot defensively. They seem very suspect at the back. They like to play out the back, much like we do. But there are times when, you know, we've all gotten nervous of some of those underhit passes. And thankfully, I've seen maybe only one has really hurt us that bad. It's like multiple times a game where they're nearly giving up chances. That being said, though, he is a very good goalkeeper. He saved the penalty against New Mexico last week. He, I think, is one of the highest save rates in the league. So he is an Argentine. So I don't know how long they'll be able to hold on to him, but I think they are lucky to have him right now.
So if Rios Novos is keeping them alive defensively, is it just that they didn't find the right solution offensively? I know Cabral is a name that's there. At first I thought it was MLS DP Kevin Cabral.
Nope.
But you informed me that it is his brother, Remy Cabral. I'd never paid attention to the first name. Is this
like the same player who is fast and technical on the ball, but he just doesn't convert, just like his brother did in MLS, or is probably still doing to some poor team. I think
he's in the Rapids in Colorado, just mucking up their system right now.
Yeah, he's one of those players who seems to have all the right attributes, but at the end of the day is just not putting the ball in the back of the net.
So then who are the players to watch? I know that we've got Rios Novo. He's got to be one of them that we want to talk about, right?
Yeah, he is definitely a player we have to watch out for. We're going to have to create some really high-quality chances. Like I said, he is an Argentinian goalkeeper. He's on loan, actually, from Atlético Lanús, from the first division. He's been with the Argentine and under 15, 17, and 23 squads. And he is definitely, you know, one of the better goalkeepers in the league. Like I mentioned, though, sometimes them playing out the back has gotten them into trouble. So maybe our pressing can kind of help us out in that. Another one to watch out there for is
Darius.
He's a Polish left winger striker. He's actually played four clubs in Poland. The team Poznan, which is famous for that celebration, which Man City copied. You know, the one where they turn their back to the stadium and all jump together?
Yeah.
That's where he was originally from. Then he came over here to the U.S. and played with Sacramento and Oakland Roots before coming down to Phoenix. Last year, he put up 10 goals and 2 assists for them, and he is always, you know, finding himself in good positions in the final third, scoring goals for himself or setting other people up.
I think the key elements here, and I'll go first on this, you know, for what RIFC needs to do to get this next win their first home win is, one, we've got to keep the ball in the final third. Similar to what we saw in Vegas, this Phoenix group, they do lead in the possession stats amongst the league right now, but it's not meaningful possession similar to what we saw at Las Vegas. So I think it's one of those things where be comfortable with letting Phoenix attempt to control the narrative, especially at least when they're playing defensively out of the back. Rios Novos does demonstrate the ability to make effective passing to get the ball out of his side. But, you know, keeping up a little bit more of that momentum and keeping that pressure on is going to considerably help what this team can do. And then just not fall for the traps, right? We need to make sure that we keep that back three solid and not overexposed. There is enough speed on this team to punish us if we get caught, you know, waiting. And I think, you know, if we talked about, did the loss kind of cauterize the wound and make this team determined to show that they can win? I don't want them to rest on their laurels that they just got their win and like everything can continue. Like, while we want to say, do this again, it needs to make sure that they continue to polish that work. I mean, we still did let one goal in, despite that there wasn't really much that could be done to save that. And then I think we just need to ramp up the intensity and try to get maybe 3 on the night so that we have that protection or that insulation from the maybe wild goal or inevitable goal that Phoenix may try to get across. You know, their score lines have mostly been them getting on the board with a goal. They haven't strung a lot of games together where they've gotten multiple goals. And there's only been maybe one where I think they were shut out completely. So this isn't a team that is afraid or doesn't know how to score. They just don't know how to win. And I think really what we need to make sure on the night is we just can't let Phoenix figure out or finally kind of smooth out and iron out their wrinkles here. We need to let them continue to be destabilized and don't give them the opportunity to identify how they can improve their game. And let's keep the hurt on them that they've been experiencing in this first quarter of games this season.
Yeah, I think that's a good call out. We don't want to let them kind of figure it out. I think that what we saw against Vegas, a lot of the high pressing, try and keep the ball on their side of the field would work very well, especially as I had mentioned that they sometimes miss hit back passes or under hit them. And I think that would be a good opportunity for us to continue to apply the pressure and make them, you know, clear the ball, or maybe we, you know, scrap up a goal from a missed pass that we can take advantage of. I think that the second half we saw against Vegas, where they had sustained possession, I think in terms of offense, Phoenix is more dangerous. So I'm hoping that we don't see that. We need to, you know, if that was Phoenix second half, they would put some more goals against us if we gave them that much possession, I think.
We didn't really talk about it because I don't want to focus on it. Other people have talked at length this week about it. There was definitely a step down in performance, but I want to blame that second half in Vegas. They were just, yeah, it was stamina, it was fatigue, they were gassed, and it was heat. And so, like, I almost kind of like what Coach was saying after the Tampa game, they had such an incredible first 45-minute performance that it didn't even negate. It just, the second half performance didn't impact what they accomplished in the first one. And sometimes that's a complete game. Sometimes you're really strong in one half and really weak in another. Sometimes you're really bad for 75 minutes and you just string something in for the final, you know, 15. And that's what it takes to get it across the finish line. So I'm not ready to tear apart the first win like that. But I think that we're not going to see that after a week's rest here at home at Burns Stadium.
I didn't mean that as like to be negative on the team. I just meant if that happens to that RAFC lets them for one reason or another have the ball for that long, I think that Phoenix will score multiple goals. So, you know, that putting the pressure, you know, pressing, trying to keep the ball out of your half as much as you can, I think would really help RAFC to kind of see themselves to another victory.
Agreed 100%. If we see those mistakes happen, it will not be due to fatigue. It'll be to mental lapse and poor decision-making versus anything built in their physical stamina. So I'm excited to see this going on. Let's get to predictions. You finally have, not only have finally you gotten got on one the board, right, but you did it. You got the prediction completely correct. So you are now at 3 points to my one. That means you go first, sir. So what are we looking at for a score line here?
So when I was thinking about this, initially my gut feeling said 2-0. And then I like thought about it more. I was like, they are good offensively. And I saw you had actually typed yours in the document already at 2-1. But I was like, I'm just going to trust my gut. I'm going to say 2-0. I think we'll get the clean sheet.
I love it. I love the confidence. Yes, I am 2-1. I think we'll see. I think this is going to be a mirror match. We're going to see the exact same thing we saw in Vegas, maybe minus some of the discombobulation at the end of regular time. I will say this, though. You are getting some flack, not in Discord, but people have been talking amongst the population that you're not in the Discord prediction league, yet you make a prediction every week. I'm just saying, I mean, you're so late now to make a historic, you know, rise to the occasion, but it is not noticed that you are not participating in the club.
I'll see if I can carve some time out for you guys.
You mean 3 seconds to copy this into the game day?
You know, I'll sit there and overthink everything.
All right, let's get into listener questions here at the mailbag. I'm going to start this one off. This is a question not for you or for me, but specifically for Seth the ref. So Norm writes in, did Lee deserve a red card for taking the ball with him, or was yellow the right call during the Las Vegas Lights game? So this is back when Lee tries to clear a ball, can't collect it at his feet, and then all he can do is kick it out. But he knows that if he skies it, a throw-in could get him completely caught unaware. So he trickles it out and then grabs the ball with his hands and runs back onto the field with it. He gets the yellow. Norm finishes writing in, there was an argument at the Providence Brewing watch party. So that's great that there were people at Providence Brewing and their watch party. It seemed like a tactical yellow, but a few folks felt like he got off easy. So rather than you and I weigh in, I went straight to the professional. Seth the ref writes in, this is a yellow all day long. I don't even know what you label as a red for something like this. For it to be dog so or denial of a goal scoring opportunity, it has to be overall movement towards the goal. In this case, the only option is yellow. There isn't a mechanic for straight red for simply impeding or delaying the game. So there you go, Norm. Straight from the truth, straight from the source. Your Seth the ref answer on that one.
The only way I think a red could happen there is if you delay the game, you get a yellow. And then you're an idiot. You delay it again.
But then that's just two yellows.
Yeah.
So it's not even possible. Straight red doesn't exist.
Yeah, that is what we call a tactical foul there. You realize you made a mistake. You waste a little time. You take the yellow and you move on. All right. And Jeff R. here wants to know, do you know why all the games have been later at 7:30 p.m.? Since the home opener, I would love to attend in person, but the later starts make it hard with a family of five.
Yeah, so this has been getting asked quietly when I talk to people in person, and some people think it's a league standard. It's not that. It is strictly the fact that this is a relationship with Bryant University and Burns Stadium. A lot of you may not realize this, but like even at the 7 o'clock games, there is lacrosse, there is gridiron football, there is Bryant soccer, there is, you know, dance programs that are going on right before the games that we come and watch. If any of you have shown up like right when you're allowed to go into the parking lot and you still see like 30 to 70 cars. Oh yeah, the
parking lot's still full.
That's because the other people haven't left yet. When I went in on the last week's game, I had to go in early for the announcement work and the stadium was trashed. Like there was trash all over the bleachers. And I said like, what is going on? Like how did this happen? And the club said, this is the result of a lacrosse team. And the people that came to watch Bryant didn't clean up after themselves, and Bryant isn't going to do that right away. So they have to go in and clean the stadium so that you can sit there and then trash the stadium so that they can clean it up again. So it's just like, it's one of those things. I hear you loud and clear. I know that I think there's a magical time that games can happen between that 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock hour. And there's a couple games coming that will be in that time. So look forward to that. I know that the club has a survey out. They're actively listening for that feedback. So if you're not getting the survey, talk to a rep, talk to someone at game day and express what you think is right for the families that you have. And the club, I mean, they can't do everything. There will be games that, especially if it's a West Coast team, they can't go too early in the day. But they can probably look to accommodating a lot of different schedules next season when we're in control of everything from a stadium perspective. Right now, though, this is not USL. This is not broadcast. For the most part, this is primarily Bryant as us being tenants. So get through this first season, Jeff. Keep your head high. And hopefully we'll see you out at some of the earlier games this season. Mouse writes in, why is fitness such a glaring issue? Is this an issue that affects RIFC more keenly, or is this a broader issue that is felt uniformly within the league?
Is this the guy who follows the team from England?
I
think there's a listener.
There is Scott. Follower. Scott RIFC UK. Is this his Discord handle?
Maybe.
Okay. If this is you, Scott, we let us know. But we're going by Mouse tonight.
So I think part of the issue is just the team plays physical, they press, it's a new team. So maybe to a certain extent, you have to overextend or work harder when you're trying to get to that pass. Cause you're still trying to fit. Everything's trying to figure out like, you know, where does Dequa want the ball? Right. So not that he has been, you know, have fitness issues, but maybe there are times when he is having to work a little harder to get to the ball because it's not being played to where he wants it to. So as those relationship builds, all of a sudden McGlynn's like, oh, and they communicate to each other. McGlynn will be like, oh, I see. You want it to this side of you, or you want to roll the defender, and you want to turn, you want it over your back. So, you know, I think that this is maybe just an early season issue that we will kind of work through and won't be too much of a big deal as we go throughout the year.
But like a high press burns you out faster than like a standard 4-4-2 catch and release, right?
Yeah, and that's why once we get everyone healthy, I think rotation will be key here.
You know, I heard a really interesting stat, and I want to give credit to this person, but I don't think they want credit for it. In our injury pool, all of our injuries, for the most part, have been our first five signings.
Cursed.
Right? So whoever got signed number six, watch out. All I'm going to say.
Do you think they remember those numbers when they're signed?
I mean, no. If it's a curse, it's just, it happens. It's like Final Destination. You're not in control of it, you know?
All right. Carlito E here wants to know, any new updates on new merchandise from RIFC? I know there was mentioned they have a bandana for dogs. Any more stuff on the way?
Yeah, so this is really interesting. In terms of new merchandise, I know there's some stuff coming, but the club hasn't told me if I can talk about it yet. So there's some really exciting stuff coming. I know that doesn't help you at all, but there is something that I already told you in the Discord, but since you didn't know it, and I haven't actually seen it on the website, the bandana has been told to me, but it is not in existence yet, or I haven't seen it. But there is a RIFC dog collar and dog leash. My dog has it on her right now sitting in this room. Those are available on game day at the merch tent. So I don't know why it's not in the shop yet. I've already got mine. I sent some pictures in the Discord. Go grab those. And I mean, there was a ton of leashes, but I only saw like X amount per size, like small, medium, large of the collars. So like, don't skimp on that. Go pick that up at the next, go get yourself a $5 RIFC Pale Ale from the Guild, and then go get yourself a dog leash and collar. So there is going to be a bunch of other fun stuff. We saw, again, we can't talk about it, but we got a tease of something really incredible that should show up, I think, maybe in June. I got to be careful what I say here.
I don't know.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing that we can't talk about, that super cool thing. So there is something coming, but you're just going to have to, unfortunately, patiently wait. And then final question on the night, Tim McDuff. We've now had 3 Wicked Good Stories released by the team, but only 1 RIFC Cribs. Which video series would you like to see the team release an episode for next? And follow up, which member of the team or FO would you like to be featured in the video?
Ooh, good question. I think I would like to see more RIFC Cribs, but at the same time, if I remember correctly, they do have like a housing apartment kind of thing, right?
I think like so, 11 of the 21 roster are the same unit.
It might not be that fun. So realistically, I think it would be good to see some more of the Wicked Good Stories. What so far we've had Turnbull,
Amos and Alves.
Alves.
Yeah. I will say this. There are some video ideas that I've thrown out there for fun things to do this summer, or at least when the weather gets better. The media director kind of looked at me and said, yeah, we could definitely do that kind of stuff. So I don't know if that's him, you know, just making like me saying just yes to me and getting me out of the room. But there's been some discussions I've gotten to partake in. A lot of them involve Chip, but there's been some fun ideas to shoot around Rhode Island.
Okay, so they should do an RAFC Cribs for Chip, but they would probably have to build a set, right? Because it would just have to be...
It's just him at the seal house in Roger Williams Park, and he's just sitting out on one of the seals. I'll give an example, because it'll be so long before this happens. If it does, I'm not giving away any trade secrets. I tried to encourage the club. Chip's costume had shown up pretty late, so it was really difficult to do, to go around to season ticket members and do like rose passing for Valentine's Day, or like Chip grams. And it was just too late for them to film something, but they were like, oh, we wish we had thought of that or known about that, you know, 2 months in advance. Cause it takes a lot to work through these things. It's not like they just come up with an idea, go out that day and shoot. Like it's a schedule just like anything else. So, there's some fun stuff coming there.
To quickly answer that though, I think, Koke Vegas as a first signing, I think we should get a Wicked Good Story from him. And then maybe Noah would be cool too. Anyone you'd like to see?
I'm really curious about Colin Smith's journey, just because he was an academy player, got some opportunities at the MLS level, and then moved to Revs 2 for a game. And then it was like, no, I want this other New England team. So I mean, I don't want that to be the focus, but nevertheless, I want to see that happen. So listen, it's going to be exciting. Rhode Island FC is back in action at home at Burns Stadium tomorrow, Friday, April 26th at 7:30 p.m. as they take on the defending USL champions, Phoenix Rising, also available on NESN Plus and ESPN Plus. The reminder, this game is the game that was moved from Saturday to Friday. So if you mark this early on when you first saw the schedule in December, please make sure you show up on Friday. The game on Saturday will be the one Messi, where you watch Messi take on the bench at Gillette and not play. There's speculation he'll play. I don't think he'll play. We'll see.
He has like special turf boots or something.
I'll just be really interested when I find out that certain Rhode Island FC staff members are at that game and they didn't invite you and me. Well, you know, we'll find out too. You know, we will find out. Now, and I don't want to go for anything other than to see a 66,000 in-game season event. Like I actually don't care about that game. The Revs aren't doing great.
Messi actually hasn't been as entertaining to watch as he was last year when it was like the new thing.
I mean, he's still doing his
thing. I mean, he is still the GOAT, you know, but I've definitely seen some more games where he has like a moment of brilliance or two, and that's pretty much it. And you're just kind of watching him walk around and watch the game. And
it's going to be an exciting soccer weekend. We've got our game, and then they've got theirs. Messi's probably somewhere in Providence, like we kind of hinted at last week. So he's probably here right now. He probably landed tonight, and and he's just taking in, you know, some matcha tea somewhere in downtown Providence right now, hanging out. So let's get out of here.
All right, guys, you can catch us on Twitter, Threads, and TikTok at RFC Podcast, on Instagram at Raising Anchor, and our website, www.raisinganchorpodcast.com.
Anchors up, buddy.
Anchors up.